Hi, this is Helen, and thank you for joining me for a cup of teal. Teal is shorthand for the future of work. It means bringing your whole self to work, a focus on purpose and self-management. And this podcast is a chat over a cup of tea with the people who are making this happen in health, care, and public services. Stories of self-management in action. Avivo is the leading organisation in Australia moving towards self-management. CEO Rosie Lawn explains how over the last few years they've been working to answer the question, if our purpose is to enable people to live at home and be part of their community, what organisational design supports this and would help us achieve our strategic goals? So they're not approaching self-management from the perspective of the latest trendy thing in health and care. It's finding the ideal organisational design to achieve their purpose. Because as an organisation, they're committed to embedding person-centred practices and citizenship, and self-management looked like the best fit to deliver this, bringing decision-making as close as possible to people supported. In this podcast, she shares what they've learnt so far, what they do differently, and offers frank advice to other organisations who want to do this. So I hope you have a cup of tea ready to listen to my first conversation with Rosie. It's a cold, windy morning here in Stockport, but in Perth, it's a sunny afternoon, and I'm delighted to be speaking to Rosie to hear about her journey and the journey of Avivo. Welcome, Rosie. I've been wanting to do this podcast with you for a long time.
Same here, Helen. It's lovely to be here. We have been talking about it for ages, haven't we?
Yeah.
And actually, it's not such a beautiful afternoon in Perth.
Oh.
It is. We are going into summer, and we've had some beautiful days, but we've actually had a little bit of rain today, so a little bit greyer outside than our usual bright sunshine.
Thank you. So, Rosie, please introduce yourself and your organisation, and then we can explore how you got started on moving towards self-management.
Yeah, well, I'll start with Avivo because it certainly has had a long and rich life. So it started actually out around about 50 years ago, and it was an organisation that was established to support people, actually primarily women, who were coming home from hospital. And it was called Perth Emergency Housekeeping Services. The essence has always been to be able to support people in their own homes and communities. And that was the very beginning of our organisation. It has evolved over the years, and so probably about lived life as Perth Emergency Housekeeping for about 20 years, and then it became Perth Home Care Services and really grew, providing a whole range of practical supports to people throughout the Perth metro area. About 3 years ago, we rebranded and became Avivo Live Life because we were providing support to people right across Western Australia, mainly in Perth and also in northern country areas. And we felt the term home care didn't capture the range of things that the teams and the support workers were doing, which was practical. There was the in-home home help, but also personal care and supporting people to access the community. And there was a lot of work too around supporting people with recovery and regaining their independence after a significant event or illness. So we have a wealth of great resources in that we have a bit over 1,100 employees who live and work in those communities throughout parts of Western Australia. Our vision has been a lot about supporting people to live at home and working in partnership with them to provide the supports and services that they choose to live their lives. So that's Avivo.
Thank you.
We're quite large in the sense that we support about 3,000 people every year. And we work across funding streams across aged care, community aged care, that being disability. And so we have had a really big impact in Western Australia with the and Australia as a whole with the National Disability Insurance Scheme, or the NDIS. And we also support people with long-term mental illness or ill health who need support to recover their lives and their live as part of the community. So across those three sectors, and also, of course, their carers and families. So that's Avivo. We have a turnover around about $65 million a year. And, we're dedicated to being in Western Australia.
Thank you, Rosie. Now, I know there'll be listeners in similar positions to you, large providers working across a big geographical area with similar size turnovers. What made you want to move from the way you were already growing and developing towards self-management?
Well, I kind of like to talk about it as an ongoing development of the organisation. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of a thing going on, I think, in this sector, isn't it? Like, oh, we discovered self-management. Mm-hmm. And whereas I think I would take our journey back a little bit further. We're really lucky in that we've always worked in community and in people's homes. I think that has made it a lot easier for us. I think we've always been dispersed. So that's another thing that... it's not like our employees worked in a centre or a base or a group home or a daycare centre. They worked in community. I actually think a lot of our support workers were making a lot of decisions anyway. But we have been on, like all of us, I think, we've seen the impact of social policy and trends in relation to doing things better. So, Avivo was very committed to working in a person-centred way. So we did a lot of work with person-centred practice through the last, when you've been around a long time, the last 15 years, we really were interested in that. We really began to realise that there was that real problem. We could see, how do we support person-centred practice within communities, and what sort of organisational design best supports that? And that's been going on for about 15 years. Mm-hmm. And we had another realisation. How I mentioned that we have a clear purpose about supporting people to live at home within the communities. And it was really around about 8-9 years ago that we really committed to supporting our vision is supporting the people we work with, our customers or whatever term you like to use, but supporting people to live as valued citizens. And so we were also struggling about what sort of organisational design supports that. I think it went back about 5.5-6 years ago. We actually did a strategic goal. We had about how do we lead and manage locally. That was the strategic goal. And we were searching for organisational designs that would help that. And I do think, along with that thing about how do we support citizenship and person-centred practice, and do that well as an organisation, and that's when we kind of stumbled across the work that had been done in reinventing organisations. So Frederick Laloux's book, I kind of came across it, and I saw the examples in there that I thought, this helps us with those problems that we had organisationally. So I could really see an organisation that it is designed to support teams to make good decisions locally and work effectively with their customers in a person-centred way, that the notion of self-management could really help that. And I suppose when I was looking at Avivo at that point too, so we could see, self-managing teams would be the mechanism of how you do this really well, bringing decision-making really close to working in partnership with customers and enabling and empowering teams to make decisions for what makes sense with and for the customers. And then I think that the other thing that was really strong with Avivo, we've got a really strong positive culture. I think that's been... It changes over time, but there is a real commitment to people and to living life. And that emergent purpose stuff really resonated with me too, that came through from Laloux. So I thought, Avivo's got the really strong emergent purpose about the work we do and values. The self-management is a way of helping us to be able to fulfill on that. And as well as that, I could see some sense with the real bringing your whole self and actually thinking about how do we support all of our colleagues, all of the support workers, all of the people that work behind the scenes to bring their whole selves to work. So that whole self, emergent purpose and self-management seemed like a really good construct to take the step with transforming the organisation. So it kind of gave me, and seeing Bertzorg, because that was actually one of the case studies, because that was people working in providing practical and nursing support in people's communities was a. It was beginning. I can see how this is potentially can really help our problems.
Rosie, that is so helpful to know, because there is a danger that people think that organisations in health and social care are just latching onto the new trendy thing in management. The next generation of management is self-management. But it's not. It's solving a problem of how do we bring decision-making as close to individuals as possible and enable teams to flourish and be creative and fulfils, well, as you said so clearly, enables you to fulfil your purpose and your strategic goals. How did you then bring others along with you? What was the process of going from you having this aha moment, as it were, to where you are now?
Well, so certainly people within the leadership team have been grappling with this problem around what sort of structure and process as an organisation did we need to be to, which we, at that time we were calling it leading and managing locally. And isn't it, I feel embarrassed saying that as a strategic goal, because it actually just shows you where our mindset was. And I can remember coming across the Reinventing Organisation, and I was attracted to the examples, and particularly Birdsall, but the other examples are really helpful as well. I think a number of us all read the book at the same time, and that was around, well, it was in 2015. It had been published a couple of years, hadn't it, at that stage. We did a lot of sharing the resources that were out there, you know, so it was a bit like taking it into the organisation, having a look like, oh, this is a really interesting model. So it was a bit like, let's have a look out into the world and see what's out there. So it was done through books initially in those examples. And at that time too, I can remember going to the board and saying, this is very exciting, and sharing my excitement about it, and actually doing presentations around the different examples within the book and how that could really meet the problem or the challenges that we saw and where we wanted to take Avivo into the future. So I do remember that being sort of in 2015, lots of excited conversations and sharing of it. And there was probably a danger with that, though, that actually people started hearing indirectly that, oh, we're going to become Birdsall, which we're going to do this. And this is the newest book that Rosie's read. Yes. And another, as you say, a bit like, oh, another new thing. So, but anyway, people did see the sense of it. So enough people, it was a bit like, so we were talking about it lots here at Avivo. And I certainly had the support of a number of my colleagues who were in leadership positions. And I was very lucky that the board membership really supported exploring further. I think it was in February 2017, I was lucky enough to actually convince, with the help of some other colleagues here in Australia, Yumi Stammett, and who was at that stage with NDS, managed to get some time. So a number of us actually went to Holland and visited, spent some time with about three different organisations who were all looking at organisational structures that had developed self-managing teams. And, you know, so along with that, we went to see Zorgacent, which is a aged care provider that made the transition with the support of Birdsall. We spent time with Birdsall. Another organisation we visited and spent some time with in Holland was called JP Van De Bent, and they are a disability and mental health provider. So we were very lucky and welcomed by these three organisations, and six of us from Avivo went together on that trip. But, and it was actually six people from a variety of points in the organisation. So whilst there was myself and a couple of other exec members, we also had a couple of people who would be more in middle management roles at that stage, and a couple of support workers and service coordinator, a support worker and a service coordinator. And it was very challenging. It was really, everybody was like, oh my God, this is what it looks like. And do we really want to do this? And we were excited and fearful at the same time. So it was a wonderful opportunity to kind of help build our vision. So I do think that we're very privileged to have that. We're very lucky to go and see those organisations. But I came away with two, and actually those organisations all said to me, you need to develop this to be your way and take more the principles and the framework of what learn what you can from us, but you've got to make it your own because you can't apply it in the same way. Well, that's what I heard anyway, and that's what I truly do believe. You've got to come up with what your context is within your resources and your organisation and your community, and work with people to create the design and then make the transition towards it.
Thank you. So how was the decision made? So you, a number of you read a book, got excited about that, visited some organisations who are putting it into practice. How did you then... So was it a sort of firm decision then, or what happened next?
It's interesting. Some people have asked me a seminal type of moment. I think I can't remember one. Mm-hmm. So remember now, this is 2016-ish. We went early 16. We actually, I think that the, I mean, one of the other things, isn't it, that Lulu talks about, I was very convinced, and along with enough people within the organisation, that going in this direction was the right way. And when exploring that and going through the pros and cons with the board, they were very supportive to it. So I can't say there was a particular date. It was more like, okay, well, now we've looked, it was like, you know, steps on the journey towards building this. So we were very committed. We already had our... You know, we've got our vision around supporting people to live life to the full, really, in the communities as citizens. And we already were trying to think about how, what's the organisational design? How do we make this possible? And the realisation was coming through that we really also needed to see our employees as citizens as well. That was emerging. But those problems were there. So it was, I really cannot say there's one moment. But certainly really the vision building and really stage happened in about 2016. I was really unrealistic about how much it would take to get there.
Thank you.
It's really unrealistic. We actually engaged, you know, our colleague Susan Basterfield, we discovered, mm-hmm. who I know worked really closely with you too. We discovered Susan, and she actually assisted us in the middle of that year to develop our first roadmap and to think of a way of working really strongly with our colleagues across the organisation to develop the kind of things we needed to achieve the vision. When I reflect back now, I see 2016 very much vision building and inspiration and doing we actually started off quite strongly with more experimenting with different forms of what the teams would look like, as well as working groups developing some of the frameworks and including colleagues through all roles and particularly support workers in that design work. So that really happened through 2017 going into 2018.
Explain to people what you mean by a roadmap, because that it might not be familiar to people.
Well, I suppose for what we talked about, the roadmap was looking at where we want to go to, a map to the place of, I suppose, working locally. This is the term we used, was we're going to be working locally, and we'd have neighbourhood teams working locally, and we'd build an organisation that supported people to work within neighbourhood teams in local areas. But that was the vision. And then was like, what would it take to get there? And we had a roadmap, which is really, another term, could have been a plan, mm-hmm. but it was critical things we needed to achieve on the way to get into that place. And it had streams across what it would take with the planning and more the evaluation and the data we would need and the frameworks we would need, along with what we would need to do with people, as well as what we would need to do with our customers and the comms and engagement with that, and also the technology. So we had four streams on the initial roadmap that really reflected those, and they interconnected.
So your roadmap was your plan of how you were going to get to a destination. At that stage, how were you managing the communications across the whole of the organisation?
We have a comms and engagement team, mm-hmm. which are pretty brilliant. I was doing quite a lot at that stage too, as emails internally, which was sort of okay. We have a big problem. We had a big problem, we're certainly challenging it, about our level of technology. Okay, so we're quite large, we're quite old, we're built on old processes and systems and old technology. So we didn't have the kind of mobile technology, which I saw within the, particularly within the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the pieces of advice they gave me. Look, it doesn't make it, but if you've got the, you know, I was really impressed the technology that they had that really enabled the work of the people in the teams. We didn't have that. What we heard from support workers and our customers was it was the face-to-face stuff and being actually involved in real work associated with the direction we were taking that really helped them understand what it was.
Thank you. And at that stage, what were you saying to people about what you were doing? So was it a message of we're moving towards self-management or we're doing some experiments? How were you framing that with the organisation?
The communications were we're moving towards working locally. And self-managing teams are a way we can see that the level of self-management within teams can really be a great way of doing it. We've probably flip-flopped a bit about the term self-management. I think, unfortunately, some people self-management think they end up think there's no management or no structure. Mm-hmm. And so in hindsight, I think it really is, you know, you are looking at a team to self-manage or self-direct and self-organise and self-govern. However, that's not without support and boundaries around it. So in hindsight, we did talk about self-managing. I think that got a little bit out of hand. People understood that as being like, well, maybe that's if anything goes, we'll have no support. We don't need anything from the organisation.
You're right. There is this perception that self-management means a free-for-all with no structure, and that's not a helpful assumption about it. So the language around this stage of an organisation taking these steps is critical, isn't it?
Mm. So we were communicating that. I think we could have done that better. Yeah. So I'm being very honest about.
Thank you.
We certainly had things getting out there. And then how well we did that at times, I think, led to misconceptions. The other thing that we were doing is we let people experiment, which was great, you know, that idea of give it a go. We want to work out and learn from what you're doing. But actually there was some of that was a bit unsafe. And then it kind of was a false start, or we didn't give them enough support to form. So that was a lot of, you know, that first 2017 or so with the roadmap, experimenting, talking about it, different things going on. But then actually it ended up getting a little chaotic. So I felt like at the end of, where are we now? So it was really about the middle of 2018. I thought we've got lots of learning here. People are on board, but actually we've got to really land on our blueprint for the teams and how and the supports and structures that we need to have to support a team to form and transition the work. Because, you know, we're not a startup. We are a transformation. Mm-hmm. And we have to keep all the wheels on as well as and take people with us. It's not just like we're recruiting completely new people, and same for customers. So we really took a bit of stock around about the middle of last year, that's 2018, and said, no, we really need to get a good blueprint for the teams, which really did build on all the experiments and so on and the learning we had from internationally. And then now we actually also established a working locally team, which was to resource the transition into neighbourhood teams across Avivo.
Thank you. So you had a period of experimentation. Some of that felt a bit scary, and you then consolidated and pulled together your learning to then create the blueprint. Is that right?
Yeah, the blueprint, and then a much more systematic transition plan rather than just kind of more who's up for it. Because unfortunately, because we're complicated as an organisation, if one team starts in one area, it knocks on to other people, you know, it is all interconnected. Mm-hmm. So we had to get a much more systematic way of helping whole areas within the city to transition into neighbourhood teams. The blueprint, I suppose, it's much more about the structure of the team. I mean, the main, for our neighbourhood teams, their primary purpose, from my perspective, is they're there to provide great support for people to live in their homes and communities and, you know, to live life. But the blueprint is that the composition of the team, the numbers within the team, the types of roles we see that they have within them the tasks that they will do. Those are the kinds of things. So it's sort of the boundaries around them as well as the structure and the roles within them.
So, Rosie, we've heard about how you communicated this with the organisation. And as you said, people can see those materials on openbookings.org.uk. How did you involve people that you serve or consumers during this process of your transformation?
We actually had a working group through 2017 that actually was made up of customers across the organisation. We've got a group called Experts by Experience, who are people who have said they're, you know, really interested in contributing to Avivo and having input in how we develop. That working group was formed from the experts, and they really looked at what they were doing and what they would be concerned about and what they would want from a customer perspective from the transition. So they provided a lot of good guidance to us about the communications, what they were concerned about, but also what they liked about it, because there was things they did like. One of the things for us was knowing people who came into your home and knowing you had better backup locally, because we were having we struggle with that, people become unwell or that sort of thing, and having someone locally to provide like backup was something that was really important to them, and having team members who would come into the home that had the skills and being able to trust that they would have the skills to provide the support they needed. So they were really helpful with the clarifying what was important to them and the things they would want as far as being consulted about it. You know, it's taken time. You know, we started this in 2016-17 and here we are in 2019. And not every area have we transitioned yet to working locally or neighbourhood teams. So it's a little bit like, how do we do this at the right time without worrying people? It isn't just about sending letters. The advice we got from our customers was that it actually really needed to be that our support workers were really on board, because they'd make or break it. Yeah. So if the support workers didn't think the transition would work, and or that they had an interest in making sure it didn't work, it wouldn't work. So we've had a very strong thing of working in partnership with our support workers to make sure that they're really confident, because we know if they go along and say, oh, they're doing this ridiculous thing about a neighbourhood team, and what's going to happen? You know, that will mean that the customers get very anxious about it. Yeah, our emphasis has been really communication with customers at the time of the transition, really making sure that the support workers and people they can go to are as much as possible on board, along with having other people who are in the background stepping in when it's required. So that's how we've been progressing with it.
Thank you. That's really interesting. And you're right, it's the balance between not sending out mass communications that make people anxious about something that may not impact on them.
There might have been no change for some people. Absolutely. Their team might all work locally now. And it was like, so we create, but there is. I mean, we're actually challenged at the moment. We've got to see, we want to transform. I'll talk about that another time a bit more with you, but we want to transfer more work into the neighbourhood teams. Mm-hmm. And some people are hanging on to either a support worker's hanging on to a particular customer out of their area. And we need to see that. We're trying to be respectful about that, but we're really looking at how we could make that ultimately that bigger step, that everybody is, the great majority of work is done by the neighbourhood team.
Thank you, Rosie. So started with some books and a visit, a period of experimentation, then consolidating that into a blueprint. Mm. And in our next podcast, we'll explore the detail of the blueprint and how self-management is actually working in practice. But for CEOs and executive team members who might be listening to this, based on your experience, what would your recommendations be around getting started?
I think the vision is very important and really building that up. You can't say exactly how it's going to look, but be really clear about where you're going. The other advice, though, is I would have taken more time about really thinking about the detail in the roadmap. I think we were naive about it, and we could have done a better job by being more considered in that space. And finally, I suppose, I think I, in hindsight, would have resourced the transition more earlier. We now have a working locally team that's helping with the transition, but we kind of really wanted to involve lots of people, which was great, but it meant there were progress was slow. So there's pros and cons with it. I think you have to have both. You want to involve people within the organization, but you need to resource the transition as well, the transformation. And the other thing is, it's, I do want to add one other last thing. It is damn hard, and it takes a long time when you're transforming an organization that's got so much built into it already. So you have to be persistent and resilient about it.
Thank you. And we'll hear more about that in our future podcast. But thank you so much, Rosie, to hear how that's got started for you and your early steps and your learning. It's absolutely fascinating, and I'm really enjoying hearing your story and your lessons. Thank you.
Thank you. It's great talking about it.
Thank you for listening. I'd love to hear your reflections. Please tweet me. I'm at Helen@WBTeams. This podcast is a companion to Open Teams. On this podcast, we share the voices and stories of pioneering organizations in health, care, and public services. And on Open Teams, you can see the documents that they're using. Have a look at openteams.co.uk. And if you're interested in wellbeing teams, please come and find me on LinkedIn, where I share a weekly 2-minute film, or my blog site, helensanderson.net. And finally, if you're interested in self-management and need some support along the way, I'd love to hear from you. I'm at helen@wellbeingteams.org. Thank you.